Welcome to The Faithful Forebears, a podcast about faithful Christian men and women throughout history. Episode 3.3, Arthur Guinness. My mission is to seek out ways to serve my fellow man and mend what the harshness of life has torn. Arthur Guinness. Each March 17th, millions of people around the world will lift up their glasses and drink one of the world's most favorite beers. It's dark, smooth, satisfying, and rich. It is, of course, Guinness. But while you may know about the famous stout beer, most people don't know about its founder. And even if you do know the name Arthur Guinness, you probably don't know that he was a devout Christian who in all things, including his beer brewing, wanted to glorify God. But he did not just want to make great beer. He also wanted to serve his fellow man, and serve, as Jesus says, the least of these. In fact, through Arthur Guinness and his beer, countless lives have been changed for the better. To learn what makes Arthur Guinness so special, though, first, we need to understand a bit about Ireland in the mid-1700s. At this time, Ireland was ruled by England, and it had been for hundreds of years, especially since the time of Oliver Cromwell in the 1600s. But the antagonism between Ireland and England was from long before that. Ireland was then, in the 1700s, as it is now, primarily Catholic. However, while the population of the capital of Ireland, Dublin, was 90% Catholic, Catholics only owned 10% of the property in the city. Most of the property was owned by English or Irish Protestants, who made up the de facto wealthy and ruling class. The official state church was the Church of Ireland, a branch of the Church of England, and so Protestant. But even though it was the official church of the nation, only a small minority of the population actually claimed to be a part of it. This meant that the antagonism between the Irish and the English was often political, ethnic, socioeconomic, and religious. Dublin also had many other problems in the mid-1700s. The streets were crowded and dirty. Poverty, hunger, and disease were widespread. It was so bad, sometimes Irish people were not allowed off ships in foreign ports for fear they would spread disease. The hardships endured by the Irish and the racism towards the Irish was spotlighted and criticized by Jonathan Swift in his satirical essay, A Modest Proposal. Jonathan Swift, if you do not remember, was the author who wrote Gulliver's Travels, among many other things. But because things were so bad for the Irish and because much of Protestant England seemed not to care, Jonathan Swift's proposal, in his modest proposal, was that the Irish should sell their children to the rich for the rich to eat them. Note, he was not actually advocating this, but he was criticizing the indifference and hypocrisy of the ruling Protestant elite and the English who chose to do little or nothing to help. Swift was trying to show the dehumanizing and tragic effects and their exploitation of the poor. To make matters worse, in the mid-1700s, there was a great famine that killed 13 to 20% of the population because of disease and starvation. This actually caused a higher percentage of death than the more famous potato famine that happened in the 1800s. So this is the Ireland that Arthur Guinness was born into. And he was born in 1724, or 1725. There's actually a little dispute about that. He was born on September 24th, or September 28th, and there's actually a little dispute about that as well. But either way, he was born in Ireland. Arthur Guinness was born in County Kildare, not far outside of Dublin. And though Ireland was primarily Catholic, Arthur Guinness was born to a Protestant family. He was not born to an aristocratic family or a particularly rich family, but they had enough to get by. His father worked for the local bishop of the Church of Ireland, And just a reminder, the Church of Ireland was a branch of the Church of England. And so again, it was a Protestant church, not Catholic. This bishop's name was Arthur Price, and Arthur Guinness was actually named after him. The bishop was close with the family, as he was also Arthur's godfather. When Arthur Guinness was a young man, Bishop Price was promoted to the Archbishop of Cashel, one of the highest church positions in Ireland. This came with a large pay increase, and since Bishop Price was a generous man, this was good news for the Guinnesses as well. But during Arthur's boyhood, his mother died. Arthur's father remarried, and his new stepmother, Claire, helped run a local pub. Arthur worked with his stepmother at this pub, and it's likely that he learned his skill of brewing from her. Arthur also continued to work with his family for their friend, Archbishop Price. When Price died, he willed some of his wealth to the Guinness family. Arthur, a young man, used this money and the skills he had learned about brewing beer to start a brewery in Leaslip. In 1759, a financial downturn led to a lot of cheap property being available. So Arthur, having been wise with his money, was able to lease an old brewery and got to work trying to make it profitable. This brewery, located at St. James Gate, had been inactive for 9 years already. Arthur leased it for £100 up front, which happens to be the same amount he had been willed by the Archbishop, with an annual payment of £45 a year. But oddly enough, this was not a temporary agreement, and the agreement stipulated that the lease would stand for the next 9,000 years. So as of today, Guinness still has a comfortable 8,743 more years before they have to renegotiate the lease on St. James Gate. The brewery Arthur bought had previously made ale. Arthur continued in this style of beer. And while he had fair success right away, his beer was not suddenly the greatest in Ireland. But he was running a successful business. But one of his first hiccups had to do with water rights. Brewing beer requires a lot of water, and the previous owners of the brewery had signed a water agreement with the city. But Arthur had never been forced to take up any such agreement. And the legend is that when some workers from the city came up to block his water pipes from a canal, Arthur met them with a pickaxe and said he would dig his own water trench if he needed to. They agreed they would settle it in court, thankfully, and there was a new water agreement signed. Arthur was also blessed in another way. In 1761, he married Olivia Whitmore. Olivia was well connected with the High Society of Ireland, and it gave Arthur some excellent connections, not to mention a dowry of £1,000, which hugely helped him invest in his brewery. The two would have an incredible 21 children together. Though tragically, though common at the time, only 10 would survive to adulthood. During this time, starting the brewery, Arthur was still active in his church. And one day in church, he heard a traveling preacher come to his local parish. This preacher's name was John Wesley. Now, perhaps I will have to do an episode on John Wesley at some point, but if you don't know him, you should know that he is a very big deal in Christian history. He was the founder of the Methodist movement and was deeply concerned about a spiritual reawakening among Christians and a focus on action, not just words. John Wesley's influence still stretches into modern British and American Christianity quite strongly, and Britain's end of slavery is pretty directly connected with Wesley's ideas. Wesley was very focused on everyday Christians using their gifts and wealth in obedience to Jesus to serve their neighbor. His simple slogan for the common worker was this: having gained all you can and saved all you can, give all you can. As one Guinness biographer, Stephen Mansfield, said, "This was the kind of faith that inspires men to make their work in this world an offering to God, to understand craft and discipline, love and labor, and skills transferred from father to son as sacred things." Hearing Wesley preach and hearing this connection of work and faith struck a chord with Arthur. Arthur loved to make a good product. He loved beer, and his attention to detail and hard work made him very good at it. But he was also attentive to the call of Jesus, and was beginning to see that this passion for creating a successful business and making a good product could do great things for his neighbor and be a way that he obeyed Jesus. Arthur saw that the neighbors he could serve most clearly were his customers, his workers, and his community. And he saw that all of them were in desperate need. He would later describe his new mission in these words: "To seek out ways to serve my fellow man, and to mend what the harshness of life has torn." As I mentioned before, Dublin was incredibly dirty, dangerous, and disease-ridden at this time. It had some of the highest rates of mortality in Europe, and most of the water in the city was not safe to drink. So many people instead turned to drinking hard alcohol, which was at least free of disease. However, in the decades before Arthur Guinness, producing gin had become cheaper and easier, and so now many people were turning to drink gin, with disastrous consequences with alcoholism. There was a common saying at the time: drunk for 1 pence, dead drunk for 2 pence, clean straw too. People were also malnourished. Many people simply weren't getting the calories they needed to survive. Remember, only 20 years previously, 10 to 20% of the population of Ireland had died of starvation. So Arthur had an idea to counter all of these problems. He wanted to make a delicious beer that was a safe option for people to drink instead of gin. He specifically wanted to make it lower in alcohol content so that drinking would not lead, or at least not lead as easily, to drunkenness. But he also wanted to make a drink that was filling and nutritious, so that people drinking it would feel fuller and actually take up some calories. So if you remember the old Bud Light commercials that said, "won't fill you up and never let you down," that is, they were saying you could drink enough to get a buzz without feeling full, Arthur Guinness wanted to do the opposite. He wanted to make a beer that would fill you up without getting you drunk. Of course, while it might be harder to get drunk on Guinness than other beers, it certainly still isn't impossible, as perhaps your college friends showed you on St. Patrick's Day. I assume both Arthur Guinness and St. Patrick would be shaking their heads if they saw how we celebrate them now. But with these goals in mind, in 1778, Guinness debuted his new stout beer. He had worked hard to get it just right, but his skill and determination paid off. It was dark, it was rich, it was creamy, and it was a hit. And soon he was brewing 5 times as much of his new stout as he was his ale. During this time, Arthur was also gaining a good reputation in Dublin. He was well respected by the other brewers in the city, and was even elected as the Master of the Dublin Corporation of Brewers, and he would speak in front of the Irish Parliament in this position. At that time, native Irish beer was taxed at a rate 5 times higher than imported English beer, making competing with English beer quite difficult. After Arthur had spent years advocating for this law to change, it finally did, with huge benefits for the Dublin economy. As his fame and his beer began to spread, Arthur also became quite wealthy, and he now had to decide what to do with it. Just as there are tech billionaires today, there were also robber barons in the 1800s, and there were also plenty of obscenely wealthy people in the 1700s who lived fabulously extravagant lives and ignored the common people. And Arthur easily could have joined their ranks. But he still had the words of John Wesley and Jesus himself ringing in his ears. So Guinness decided to do something different. He decided he would invest in his workers, his customers, and his community. Now, Guinness was very dedicated to to making sure that his workers were well taken care of. And he did it in all sorts of different ways, going far above and beyond any standard of the day for employees and employers. To start, he paid his workers 10 to 20% higher than the average of the day. He also built many sturdy and modern homes in Dublin for his workers. Some of these homes are still standing and still in demand today. He provided medical and dental care to his employees centuries before health insurance was common for employers. He focused on having places for his employees to have outdoor recreation for themselves and their families. He also offered his workers education on financial management, nutrition, sanitation, and parenting. Arthur would even pay for company outings for families to the countryside. Imagine if companies like Amazon or Walmart took such good care of their employees. But Guinness did not only have his eye on his employees. He also had his eye on the entire community. As Arthur became more and more successful, he built city parks throughout Dublin. He donated large sums of money to Trinity College and established a trust for the poor, which is still in operation today. He supported gardens and associations for the care of animals. He patronized art that celebrated Gaelic culture. He even founded the first Sunday schools in Ireland. Now, these Sunday schools were a bit different from our understanding of Sunday school today, because in these Sunday schools, for many poor children in Dublin, there was no public education at all. So Sunday school was their only school. This provided the double benefit of the basics of education and learning about the gospel of Jesus. On top of this, Arthur also raised money to refurbish churches, both Protestant and Catholic. And this is another area into which Arthur Guinness shines, as a follower of Jesus and a seeker to be a peacemaker. He regularly sought to serve Catholics of Ireland, even though he himself was Protestant. This was very much against the current of wealthy and elite culture in Ireland at the time. Remember, there was a lot of distrust between these groups. But Arthur still fought for the rights of the Irish Catholic in his own country. He made sure to hire as many Protestants as Catholics in his brewery, something the company would sadly later cease to do, and only hire Protestant managers. They would not start again until the 1960s. There are still plaques in Catholic churches today in remembrance of Arthur Guinness's defense for his Catholic countrymen. In all these things, care for his workers, care for his community, care for his customers, and his defense of Catholics, Arthur challenged his fellow wealthy citizens that they needed to do the same. He was basically saying in his actions, "You have been greatly blessed. Now it's your job to bless others." Now, for all of this, some people today still have criticism for Arthur Guinness, calling into doubt the motives for his humanitarianism. Some say he just treated his workers so well because he wanted them to be loyal and to work harder, or he just built up his community because he knew it would be good for his brand. Now, since we can't know a person's heart totally, we can't be sure. But I do know it would be silly to say something like, "A man just treats his wife well because he loves her and wants her to love him." Or, "A man just sacrifices for his children because he wants them to thrive and have a good relationship with him." Or, "That soldier just goes to fight in a war because he wants his country to win." When you build up your community, the natural consequence is that you will be respected. And when you treat your workers well, the natural consequence is that they will be loyal to you. And as Arthur showed, not only did he meet the minimum requirements, he went far beyond and pushed the boundaries of how those in power and influence should care for those below them. Arthur Guinness would die on January 23, 1803, respected and loved by his family, his customers, his workers, and his community. Arthur's legacy still lives on in many ways. Some of the charitable organizations he founded still exist today. And Guinness, as a company, is still known today as the best employer in Dublin. Although it might be a self-claimed title, most people do agree with it. Arthur would go on to have many descendants. Some good, and some not as good. For instance, there is one who insisted on dressing up as a Greek god, which, of course, is never a good sign. But there would also be others who would be dedicated to helping their society and nation, including Edward Cecil Guinness, who helped create a great deal of affordable housing in London and Dublin. Now, Guinness as a company has many other wonderful stories. They had brilliant ad campaigns, which solidified their place as a premium beer for Ireland, one of the most iconic beers in the world. They would also stumble upon huge success when they invented the Guinness Book of World Records. And I'll be honest, probably for the first 25 years of my life, I did not know it was the same Guinness. Also, it is worth noting that while the Guinness stout beer was always loved, it was not until 1946 that it was nitrogenated. That is, that the super creamy head of the beer, which comes from nitrogen, did not come about until then. But thank goodness it did, because it is so creamy and tasty. So today, while Guinness is an internationally known brand, and a huge success in so many ways, I do think it's pretty sad that they don't make any mention on their website of the faith in Jesus that inspired Guinness to the success that he reached. Because truly, Arthur Guinness, the man of faith, was indispensable to Arthur Guinness, the man of business. The success, the philanthropy, the dedication, the focus on the well-being of his workers and community, these all could not have existed without Arthur Guinness's faith. And we wonder today why corporations and businesses are not more moral. And we ignore the greatest force of change for good, obedience to Jesus, and then wonder why the good doesn't happen. It reminds me of something from C.S. Lewis in his book Abolition of Man. We remove the organ and demand the function. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. How can we expect to have more Arthur Guinnesses when society ignores or hides what made Arthur Guinness who he is? But for those of us who do remember who made Arthur Guinness the way that he was, what can we learn from our brother Arthur Guinness? Well, one thing I think we can learn is that whatever our passions are and whatever our strengths are, there are always ways to utilize those in service to Jesus. Arthur Guinness learned he loved to make beer, and he did that to the best of his abilities and in service to Jesus. Another thing we can learn from our brother is this. We should not accept what society tells us is an acceptable minimum in serving our neighbors. Arthur Guinness went far beyond what society expected of him in the way he treated his employees. Instead of using the standard of his day for his actions, he looked at what Jesus expected of him. Because of that, he helped change for the better the care of common workers and the expectations society has of employers and employees. And lastly, we can learn this. We have no idea how God will use our hard work, creativity, and faith. And that we can be confident that anything we do in obedience to Jesus, he will bless. Now, if you want to learn more about Arthur Guinness and his legacy and his faith, I suggest you check out The Search for God and Guinness by Stephen Mansfield. This is where I got most of the information for this podcast. So I hope that this story, the story of Arthur Guinness, inspires you to use your gifts in service of someone around you. And whether you drink beer or not, or whether you drink Guinness or not, every time you see one or hear its name, you can know that it comes out of one man's faith in Jesus. And if you do drink one, you can toast and thank God for his servant Arthur Guinness and his God-given skill. You know what? This episode is making me thirsty. I think I could go for a cold pint of Guinness right now. If you have any comments or questions, please don't hesitate to contact me. You can contact me at eric@faithfulforebears.com or through my website, faithfulforebears.com. As always, please like and review the podcast. And if you like this episode, please tell a friend. I'm Eric Claussen, and thanks for listening.